ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I never thought I'd live to see the day that 18,000 people would come and watch a wheelchair basketball game.
Australia playing in both the sitting and standing volleyball, intellectually disabled basketball.
As long as people compete, they'll cheat. Classification is an issue that just absolutely haunts Paralympic sport and still has a long way to go to be satisfactorily resolved.
18-year-old Louise Savage was Australia's most successful track and field athlete, breaking two world records on her way to three golds and a silver.
I've done much better than I ever hoped for and dreamed for.
I'm Louise Savage. Welcome to the second part of the Paralympic journey. I'm a wheelchair track and road racer. I competed in four Paralympics and won 13 medals. The Paralympics today are a big spectacle, a long way from their role as rehab for injured World War II soldiers. Now they're a place where dreams are realised in front of huge crowds, and there's big money involved.
There's chairs that are around at the moment worth 50 grand. You're not going to get a chair like that unless you're sponsored. So that means only a very select few are able to push in the best technology.
The Paralympics has had a lot of milestones since its beginnings in 1948. I'm totally biased, but Sydney 2000 really was the big game changer. It was the first time both the Olympic and Paralympic Games organising committees came together and collaborated. So we had the same facilities, the same opportunities. Sydney gave the Paralympics the status it deserved and helped the rest of the world see the Games as they are today. But it's still evolving.
Indeed, last night, the biggest crowd ever for a Paralympic opening ceremony gathered here at Stadium Australia.
It was also the first Games where lots of us had corporate sponsors, and with that status came expectations.
But we start at the Olympic Stadium where finals continue today on the track, including Australia's Louise Savage in her favourite event, the 800 metres.
In 2000, I was at the point in my racing career where expectations were super high. I'd had my best Games in 1996 in Atlanta. I won four gold medals, so I was pretty stressed in 2000. The Sydney Games also made history because of the reaction we got from the Australian media and the public.
As Sydney embraced nearly 4,000 athletes from over 120 countries.
An important thing to understand about the Paralympics is the classification system. Athletes get classified by assessors who test their impairments and then assign them to a category, so they're best matched with other athletes. One sport could have multiple categories. Over the years, classification has been controversial because it's not an exact science, and some people have tried to game the system.
The Spanish basketballers were stripped of their medals when it was revealed all but two players in Spain's gold medal-winning intellectually disabled basketball team should not have competed in Sydney. The Paralympic movement went into a tailspin.
Swimmer Siobhan Payton experienced a brutal crash landing after taking away a bag of gold medals at the Sydney 2000 Games. Something happened at these Games that had nothing to do with Siobhan, but the scandal wreaked havoc on her life for years.
Payton shot to fame after claiming six gold medals in the pool at the Sydney Paralympics.
The entire crowd is standing and applauding Siobhan Payton.
Hi, my name is Siobhan Payton. I'm 39 years old and I was Paralympian of the Year for 2000 and won six gold medals individually.
Siobhan competed in swimming's intellectually impaired classification. She has an intellectual disability.
It's a brain mental dysfunction. It occurs at birth. It could also occur if you have a car accident and stuff like that. But mine was due to a lack of oxygen at birth, so yes. It affects my everyday life because I'm slower at grasping things. Mentally challenged.
Siobhan also has Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, or EDS. It affects the body's connective tissue, which means her ankles and knees are weaker than the rest of her body, and her limbs are hyperflexible. She told our producer, Sarah Allerley, that the best therapy for EDS is swimming.
So the professor basically told me to swim. So we swim, I did. And my coach noticed me being slow in the uptake of grasping the drills and stuff. And that's how I was introduced to the Paralympic world, was via my swim coach.
And how old were you then?
13.
So this was when Siobhan was classified as an intellectually impaired swimmer. Only 4 years later, she was in the pool at Homebush for the 2000 Paralympics.
I heard the words go, go, go from the crowd and I just went. Touched first. Couldn't believe it. One of the happiest memories I have of touching first, of winning gold.
How long did it take you to register that you'd won?
It took me a while because everybody was screaming, yeah, yeah, good on you. What do you mean? You won? Holy sh... Baloney. I won.
So how did it feel to win the gold medals?
Exciting, real, making me feel like I was a true champion. I'm very excitable at 17 of age.
Siobhan was the golden girl of Australian Paralympic swimming in 2000. She was told the world would be her oyster, but instead, her life took a very different direction.
The Spanish basketballers were stripped of their medals. They were 12 golden days last October. Australia's Paralympians swept to the top of the medal table, the intellectually disabled members playing a vital role. But when it was revealed all but two players in Spain's gold medal-winning intellectually disabled basketball team should not have competed in Sydney, the Paralympic movement went into a tailspin.
Some members of the Spanish basketball team pretended to have an intellectual disability. They'd cheated in the most blatant way.
I didn't find out until the day that we were doing the Canberra parade, and there was whispers on the bus that Spanish basketballers cheated. Nobody was telling me what was going on. Was it true? Was it not true? Once I found out it was true, very upset, very angry, despised my medals. I had to put a plea smile on my face because we were at an event. And Bob's your uncle, it was very disturbing that some people could just do that to line their pockets.
It's unclear exactly what the motivations of the Spanish intellectually impaired basketball team were. A cheeky medal grab? Maybe a publicity stunt? Or a test to draw attention to issues of classification generally. One of the cheats was actually a journalist who blew the whistle and claimed only two of the players were legitimate.
There are wider accusations of cheating by the Spanish, with a newspaper report claiming that at least 15 able-bodied athletes were included in their team. Spain finished third on the medal tally at the Paralympics. Now the International Paralympic Committee is being urged to investigate all the cheating accusations.
It does put into question the movement. It does put into question, you know, all athletes with an intellectual disability.
Grappling with a tightening of the entry rules, the international body has suspended all intellectually disabled athletes.
Siobhan was legitimately classified, but the Sydney scandal wrecked the credibility of the whole intellectually impaired Paralympic community. Intellectual impairment was removed as a classification by the IPC, the International Paralympic Committee. That ban lasted for 12 years.
Basically, we were guinea pigs with hope, saying that we might be in 2004 Paralympics. We were very angry and very devastated because we all thought that nobody wanted us. Well, this is what I thought, that nobody wanted us, nobody cared.
Siobhan didn't compete in the Paralympics again.
No. After that, I thought my time had come and gone. I did extremely well at my first ones. Was hoping to back it up in Athens and maybe Beijing.
And you set a world record, didn't you, at the Sydney 2000 Olympics?
I set 10 Paralympic records and 8 world records.
Siobhan was one of many intellectually disabled athletes around the world whose sporting careers were disrupted or even destroyed by the Spanish basketball team's cheating stunt. It wasn't until London 2012 that the IPC managed to bring back the intellectually impaired classification. Siobhan's experience was that she found it hard to get reclassified, and her mental health suffered.
I was hospitalised for 6 weeks with depression and anxiety. A lot of different therapists and a lot of different medication to find the right one. Now I have a great team behind me, so I'm on the road to recovery, according to them.
Siobhan's finally easing back into swimming as part of her support plan.
Now I feel that I'm great with my medals, but before I just could not look at them. I felt disgusted.
Siobhan's rummaging around in a drawer looking for her medals.
So when the Spanish basketball team cheated, there was a big media coverage and I would be the face of the intellectual disability group as such because I won 6 individual gold medals. And I just couldn't look at them because I felt I was depressed.
Even though no one accused Siobhan personally of cheating, she says it was her name and face that the media kept using in the stories about the Spanish basketballers. But winning gold stays with her. There's a photo in her dining room of the Athens 2004 Australian Olympic swim team. Siobhan's sister Sarah was in that team, along with Ian Thorpe, Michael Klim and Grant Hackett.
Was she younger or older?
Younger.
So you might have inspired her then?
I hope so.
Classification comes up a lot when you're talking about the Paralympics, because the games are kind of all hinged on figuring out levels of disability. And while there hasn't been a controversy as dramatic as the Spanish basketball team in 2000, there have been reports of coaches and athletes exaggerating impairments while they're being classified. And it's tricky because people's impairments can change over the years, and so some Paralympians have to be reclassified.
As long as Paralympic sport's been played, there've been suspicions of people cheating, there've been people cheating.
Paralympic historian Tony Nahr brought up classification too when our producer Sarah met with him. Tony worked for Paralympics Australia from 2000 until 2020.
There's multiple events in the 100 metres athletics for men, and the reason is that athletes are divided according to their level of impairment to make it as fair as possible. So you won't have a person in a wheelchair competing against a person who's missing their hand, for example. But that means that when you're putting people into classes, there's always borders or edges where people could be in one class where they might be uncompetitive, but if they're in a different class, they might be more competitive. And, of course, people are looking to be as competitive as possible and have the best possible chance. There are attempts to make it as exact as possible, and you have very, very experienced people doing classification, and they don't always get it right. And if athletes make it very difficult for them, and there are ways to make it very difficult for them, then that can be unfair as well.
What about coaches making it difficult too? Because there has been reports of coaches encouraging athletes to make it difficult for the classifiers.
Yeah, well, you know, as Paralympic sport becomes more desirable to win, then it's more desirable for everyone to win. You know, not just coaches, but administrators, everyone, you know, gets kudos and gets funding from results. And if results bring funding, it's the same in able-bodied sport, it's the same in almost any human activity. There are a group of people who will cheat.
When you were working with Paralympics Australia, did you hear about misrepresentation and classification or cheating going on in Australia?
I mean, I know of cases where people have changed their lives and changed the way they interact with others for the benefit of their participation in sport.
And did they actually go to the Paralympics?
You hear rumours. So, yes, you hear rumours about people.
It is very easy to exaggerate in a classification. And there are people who are just doing it because they're not winning in their classification. They want to compete in a classification that they can win in.
The ABC's Four Corners program reported in 2023 that intentional misrepresentation among Paralympians was a problem in Australia and around the world.
In 2016, the IPC investigated more than 80 athletes for intentional misrepresentation.
There are still athletes currently who are misrepresenting their abilities, not only in this country, but throughout the world. It's problematic because they are protected.
That was Jane Buckley, former Paralympic classifier, talking to Four Corners.
Well, it's going to be a bit different as well. Like, I'm just
wheelchair table tennis coach and Paralympian Danny DeToro has seen a fair bit in her 35-year career.
Classification is really difficult. It is not a perfect science. It's really hard to find multiple people with exactly the same functional ability. There's definitely been history where people have kind of gone, oh, where's the line and how can we kind of move over it? And you know, those things, I think the general public have seen that, you know, every couple of years there's lots of gaps in the way that kind of classification works in general that I think could be really worked on. From a sport like table tennis, it's changed over a lot of period of time. There are people I played tennis against 20 years ago that wouldn't be able to play today.
Danny means these athletes wouldn't have qualified for the Paralympics under today's standards. More impairment is required now, hopefully making it harder to exaggerate.
A minimum disability level, you know, like that it's not considered, I guess, disabled enough to kind of be participating or competing.
I think Danny's right.
Contact a bit lower. When the contact's here, it's really hard to control that. If I can get it there, then I can get some movement. Yeah.
The Paralympics has come a long way since its origins as a rehab activity. And the more elite it's become, the more money's involved. The athletes of today, like Madison Di Rosario, who I coach, race in chairs that are built for speed. They have three wheels and they're made of carbon fibre. They're lightweight and aerodynamic. Their chairs are worth more than my car. We're talking around $50,000. When I first started competing, the chairs all had four wheels and were similar to the chairs that were used off the track. They didn't have any form of steering and at high speed, the front wheels wobbled. We thought we were fast back then, but well before I came on the scene, Kevin Coombs was competing in a chair even more basic.
We didn't have corporate sponsors and we were pioneers, I guess, and we were the trailblazers and we were setting the pace.
That was Kevin Coombs in 2000. But back in 1960, being a person with a disability and being a Paralympian was very different when Uncle Kevin competed in wheelchair basketball in Rome.
And they used to treat us as a poor relation, really.
Back in Australia, Kevin had years of feeling like a second-class athlete. Here he is a few months before he died in 2023.
We were beggars. We used to shake tins outside of footy grounds in freezing cold. But nowadays, you just go in, train, go home. When we used to train at basketball, we'd have to sweep the floors at the stadium, then train, and then go.
By the time we got to Seoul in 1988, some money had started to trickle through for the Paralympics, but not enough.
The only sour note for the team is that the $1 million raised isn't quite enough, and they're leaving for Seoul in debt.
We're behind by about $50,000 to $60,000, so we will be continuing to fundraise even after we wave goodbye to the team.
The athletes are still hoping for some last-minute sponsors, or perhaps some extra funding from the federal government.
It was pretty hard in those days, but that's all changed now. The Paralympic movement has just gone from strength to strength. And I think when Channel 7 got behind it and the corporates come on board, that's been marvellous.
I think the Paralympics represent changing perception of disability by using sport as the vehicle, and as sport, using sport as a vehicle to change people's lives as well.
Kate McLaughlin from Paralympics Australia is the chef de mission, basically Australia's team boss for the Paris Paralympics.
Once every 4 years, the Paralympic Games shines a light on the ability of these amazing humans. It just reminds people that of what's possible and not to just push these people away as, oh, they've got a disability and they're not able to participate in life in the same way an able-bodied person can. When parents of kids with disabilities see people on the world stage competing in sport and seeing athletes like their kids doing these amazing things, it just changes their sense of what's possible
Of course, a very small percent of people with disabilities end up being Paralympians.
I know at times the disability community, those that aren't involved in sport, sometimes don't necessarily like what the Paralympics stands for sometimes, around elitism. And by the very nature of Paralympic sport, it's exclusive and it's like the Olympics, isn't it? It's the best of the best. But I still feel like there's that element where the Paralympics hopefully identifies massive opportunities in the communities to help people with disabilities. You know, they contribute in such amazing ways, whether it's in sport, in the arts, in employment, and hopefully opens people's minds to what's possible and their perceptions change.
Definitely I've seen a shift. I feel like, without the Paralympics, I feel like you wouldn't have as many positive people in this world with disabilities. I don't believe you'd have as many people in Australia coming out saying they have a disability.
Riley Batt's a wheelchair rugby champion. He's won 2 gold and a silver at 5 Paralympic Games.
You know, I wheel down the street and any town I could be in, they come up to you and go, "Are you Riley Batt?" And I don't like that. I don't like the recognition because I'm a very modest person, but they're not just looking at, I guess, people with disabilities going, "Oh, well done, you know, you gave it a crack." They're seeing you as a role model. They want your autograph. They want photos. They're introducing their kids to you, and those kids are then seeing people with disabilities as normal people.
Historically, it's all about media attention and focus. That's what's driven change for the profile of the Paralympics.
After years of training, nearly 2 weeks of competition against the world's best and a 25-hour flight, some of Australia's elite Paralympians returned from Barcelona, weary but proud.
No, I'm glad to be back, you know. I wouldn't mind staying on a bit longer, but no, it's good to come home.
At my first Paralympics in Barcelona, I remember how significant it was that people back home could watch us compete. The coverage was still minimal, but we were there on the TV. Each night we had a half-hour highlights package. Then, in 2000, Sydney put on a great show and started the ball rolling on making the Paralympics and our athletes equal to the Olympics. And we got a lot of media attention at home, but London in 2012 took the Paralympics to a whole new level.
My God, I've seen that a heap and it still gives me tingles.
Channel 4 in the UK created an ad campaign that's been given a lot of credit for this change.
I didn't see any ad that good during the Olympics.
This is the Gruen Show folk talking about it on ABC TV in the lead up to the London Paralympics.
Like, it's a build-up campaign and they're reminding us that the Paralympics is not the after run.
On that note, there's billboards all over London and they say, "Thanks for the warm-up."
So Channel 4 made Paralympians and people with a disability in general be seen. And the more media, the more audience. So the more funding opportunities like sponsorship. Then the more elite athletes can become. And round it goes. Here's Kate McLaughlin again from Paralympics Australia.
I think it's shifted dramatically. Like, in the time I've been here in London, I could have counted our sponsors on one hand. And by the time we got to Rio and then obviously Tokyo, we shared a lot of common sponsors with the Olympic team, which has been a huge shift. And in some cases, we've got sponsors who are only sponsoring us this time around. And I think companies are increasingly seeing the value in the Paralympic team and the stories that our athletes, you know, tell and, you know, their backgrounds. Now we're seeing vast swathes of athletes who've got personal sponsors.
Do you think that's directly tied to the increase support from broadcasters or the increased interest from broadcasters?
Yeah, absolutely, I do. Yeah. I think the success of the Australian Paralympic team's been amazing too. You know, we do well. We punch above our weight as a small country.
And historian Tony Naar says sponsorship for the top elite Paralympians is a much more appropriate way to fund athletes than public fundraising campaigns.
There's also still a sense of, you could almost call it a charity, you know, a sort of sympathy for people with disabilities, which has no part in the Paralympics.
There's still some tricky stuff around sponsorship.
Sponsorship in the Paralympics, I find it a challenging space. It's way better than it was, but it could still be better.
I've known Angie Ballard since she was about 14. I chaperoned her 18th birthday party. She's been such a powerhouse in track racing.
There's a couple of things that come up is that the same people get sponsored. So you'll have like someone with six sponsors and making quite good money. And then you'll have other people like myself who have never had a sponsored chair in my life. So I've been racing since I was 12. So that's 30 years of buying all my own equipment and so on. And that can be really frustrating. I remember I won gold at the 2014 Glasgow Commonwealth Games. So I won the race. And I remember someone saying, there was someone else that won gold medal that night. And I remember the media person saying to me, you're going to be like untouchable after this. Like they'll just, everyone will want you. Everyone like, untouchable was the wrong word there, but you know what I mean? Like everyone will want you, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, look, I don't believe that, but we'll see what happens. And nothing. But even when I went into 2018 Gold Coast Games, defending gold medalist, not a lot. So for me, I had a car accident when I was 7. So I had spinal cord injury, so straight up paraplegic, pretty cut and dried, can't walk.
Angie's competed at 6 Paralympic Games before Paris.
Well, I first started some wheelchair sports, I think, around 9 or 10, but wheelchair racing was at 12. Got a chair off someone, like secondhand chair. It was like probably 4 inches too big for me and I was pushing with the arms way out, but I loved it. Like it was so stupid. I remember my first push was at this 24-hour push-a-thon and most people were pushing around in their day chairs, but someone offered to let me have a go in a race chair and I don't know how long I pushed for, but I had blisters and the sorest neck and back and arms and I still wanted to do it. So, and that's what I look for when we have juniors or anyone starting wheelchair racing these days. They are impossible to steer, especially at the beginning. So you're looking for those ones that despite everything, they still want to keep doing it. And you're like, you're a little bit crazy and we like that.
Standing starts, so from a stop starts. And now we're up to some flying ones. So in a second, let's get moving again.
I used to train with Angie and later I coached her. She was the skinny little kid who's gone on to so many bigger and better things. She's a world champion and she set world records.
When I first had my accident, I was just a 7-year-old kid and then like somewhere along the way I dislocated a hip and lost all the muscle tone on the left side of my body. I get spasms on the right side of my body, so that creates tone even though I don't control that. It's still muscle contractions. And then I have rods, so that's metal from my neck to my hips, but it's not attached to my pelvis. So my spine has now started twisting round itself separate from my pelvis. So that means when I sit in the chair, my knees are going one way, my hips are going another way, and my shoulders are going another way. So it's like this weird little slinky scenario where we have to try and fix everything so that it's sort of straight. And sort of straight is the goal. You will never be symmetrical and you accept that, but it's about like how do we get the most efficiency and most power through the push.
Angie Ballard's won medals in racing at several games, but as her body ages and changes with her disability, her capacity keeps changing. It's a real challenge.
Sometimes our limits today aren't our limits tomorrow. I think that's a really important thing for almost anyone, but you often get in the able-bodied media just that, you know, push your limitations, blah, blah, blah. That's your job as an athlete, is to try and find your limit. And there has to be some acceptance as well as some drive to, you know, Monday's session might not go that well, but you've got to front up and get tomorrow and figure out what the next, how you can push yourself beyond that.
I'm Louise Sauvage. The producer is Sarah Allerley. Supervising producer is Claudia Taranto. And the sound engineer is Russell Stapleton.
You've been listening to the second part of The Paralympic Journey on ABC Rewind. Check out the first part on our Listen app. It doesn't matter what order you hear them in. And if you want a deeper, broader dive into the world of the Paralympics, including some great interviews with international players, check out Unbroken, The Paralympics and Its Record. It's a four-part documentary podcast hosted by Paralympian Annabelle Williams. Our producer, Sarah Allerley, made it for Higher Up when she collected these interviews. And the episodes can be found on the usual podcast apps.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.